Unexplained with Howard Hughes.
Listen online.
Watch it live on your smart TV.
The Unexplained with Howard Hughes on Talk Radio.
Howard Hughes.
Thank you very much for all of your communications that have come to me through the day. If you want to check out my latest Facebook page, a situation update on the unexplained, it is there at my official Facebook residence, the official Facebook page of the Unexplained with Howard Hughes. Don't miss it. It's there now. So many people. I have to tell you, you know those photographs that Emma and Mike took in Kirby? That post that I had, even up to the show, before the show started last week, had thousands of engagements. I've never known anything like it. It's amazing. You can always send me your images, anything like that. I can't always guarantee that I can get them analysed for you, but they're always gratefully received. All right, let's do this now. Glynis Allen is somebody who is connected directly with the NHS because she worked in it. Born psychic, Glynis Allen has seen, heard and communicated with the spirit world all her life, her biography says. As a child, she was guided by her grandmother, a seer herself, and learned to develop her gifts as she sees them carefully so that she might help others with life's challenges and with the grief of their loved ones passing. Working as a senior hospital nurse for decades, she has encountered innumerable ghosts and seen the spirits of the deceased rise and live on, she says. Her book is called Ghosts of the NHS. And the details of it will be at the back end of this. But this is my conversation recorded a couple of days ago with Glynis Allen about ghosts of the NHS. I had a quick skip through your book today. It is a very unique book. Now, you, I think, are you still a nurse in the NHS?
No, I retired. I had a brain hemorrhage and a back injury 22 years ago now. And I couldn't go back to work.
Okay.
And I was absolutely gutted, absolutely. But, good memories, yeah.
Now, I know a guy who's a regular guest on this show, and he's become a friend of the show, a guy called Ian Rubenstein. You might have heard of him. He's a GP, an NHS GP in the Essex area. And, you know, he's psychic. And, you know, sometimes he will get impressions of things that are happening with patients and stuff like that. So, you know, these things I think we know all the time in the NHS. But even though you're not working in it now, going through the book, it seems that the memories of these things that happened to you are very, very clear.
They are. And you cannot, you know, as I began to write the book, it all but little bits kept coming back and coming back. And, you know, situations, for instance, you know, when patients came into A&E, I clearly, in my mind, I can see it, and that's why I wrote about it.
And how were you able to do the job within the NHS? We know it's busy, it's always busy, it's unrelenting, it always was. How were you able to do that, having, you know, what you say is a psychic gift?
Difficult. Is the only word I can say. It was difficult, you know, seeing that, like, a patient's soul leaving the body, you know, knowing that they died, and then, you know, they take them into resource and try to save the life, but I knew that they'd already gone because the silver thread, which we all have connected to us, that was broken. Excuse me, that was broken. And so it was very difficult for me spiritually. And I absolutely loved my job in A&E. And I thought, well, this is, I can't do this any longer. So I moved back to a different department, which I'd enjoyed working in, central treatment rooms. It was difficult. And especially with children, you know, an old folk as well coming in, knowing that, you know, they're not going to survive. It is very, very difficult.
That's a big, almost responsibility for you. If you think that you sense that somebody coming in is not going to make it, I don't
That's
know how,
true.
If you're trying to give them treatment, how does that affect you?
Well, we did our very best to try to save the lives. You know, the doctors carried on with what they're doing. They administered the treatment, the CPR. And then I just stood back because obviously I'm not going to jump in and say, I think he's passed on, you know. So the doctors did the job and, you know, that was that. And then I had the job of laying him out after they'd died, which to me was a privilege. You know, I would talk to them.
This is a strange thing to ask you, really, but this has stayed with me for 16 years now. I was very close to my mother, and I lost her 16 years ago this month. And you never get over it, you know that, and anybody who's heard me talk about this on the radio will know that, you know, that's how I feel, and I'm sure that's how many people feel, most people feel, with the loss of a parent. It's just something that stays with you always, and you're constantly reminded. But in that period, in the hours after she died, I had to drive up to Southport. I was working in London. And, you know, I wasn't there when she died, but she hadn't been dead long when I saw her. And I'd never seen anybody who died before. And I got the feeling, and of course this is only an opinion, I'm not saying how this is because who knows, but I got the feeling that she was hearing what I was saying to her.
Yeah, that's true. That's very, very true. It is like, I think everybody has a feeling that, you know, they're going to pass over. And your mum would have thought, oh, my Howard's not here, you know. And because you were late in getting there and not actually being with her when she died, she would have sort of hung about, if that's the word. Mm. You know, because she knew that you were going to get there, you know, eventually. So, yeah, your mum would know, you know, that you've tried.
There are going to be a lot of people listening to this who think that, you know, when you go and it's the end of everything. It's just blackness and it's oblivion. And there are many people who don't believe that. And a lot of those people listen to this show. But yeah, I don't know why I'm talking about this now, but let's do it. I've never talked about this. Those 16 years ago, driving up to the hospital in Southport, I got, it was a clear day, I got a very clear road. The M6 was not as bad as it often is. So, I made very good time. I got to Stoke-on-Trent, and I will never forget a beam of sunshine coming through my driver's side window, and I heard a message, or thought I did, that said, I've turned the corner, it's okay. Now, I could have taken that anyway. I think in my heart I knew that she'd probably gone then by the time I was still an hour and a half away. But it could have meant the opposite. It could have meant that she'd turned the corner and she was okay now. But in my heart of hearts, I knew that probably wasn't true. But I just felt tremendously calm at that point. It was a very, very weird thing. Have you ever heard anything like that before? I swear that's true.
Yeah, oh, I know, I believe you 100%. Yeah, loads and loads of times, you know, relatives have been coming, we phoned them saying, you know, your relative is, you know...
Well, they don't say, do they? They don't say, you know, your mum's, thank God they didn't. I was, you know, I don't know what I'd have done. They don't say your mum's dying, but they just said, you need to get here. She's going downhill, was what they said.
Yeah. And when that situation is created, it is like it takes on a whole new view, you know, of people. How can I put it? It is like they spirit comes forward, spirit angels come forward. You know your mum's going to pass over, and it's just like they give you some comfort from your mum. And I know that must sound to people crazy, but that's how it sometimes happens. And I can remember one chap coming, and his wife had she collapsed, had a brain hemorrhage, and he said, as I was coming here, he said, I only 5 miles away. He said, I felt a huge relief, because his wife had been poorly for a long, long time, a huge relief coming to my mind that she'd actually passed away. And I felt her. I felt her around me, and I felt the, you know, I felt comfort, and I felt like she'd put her arms around me. So, yeah, it does happen. It does happen.
How were you able to do your job in the NHS, sensing the things that you believe that you sense? Did you talk to your colleagues about this, or did they not know?
Not a lot. I've got to be honest, is that... what can I say? Yeah, a lot of nurses would come, and mainly promotion, mainly relationships. You know, would you read me hand? Would you read me tea leaves? Mm. You know, not a lot about fetching mum or dad forward. How are they? It were more cooler, you know, if that's the word. They just wanted to know relationships and how the job were going and, you know, different things like that. But yeah, I used to read the tea leaves on my break, by the way. Yeah, on my break, I, you know, people used to phone me and say, you know, I'm desperate. So I didn't have many breaks. Yeah. I had a queue wanting people the tea leaves reading. Okay. But yeah, as time went on, I thought I've got to put this to one side, especially being in A&E. I've got to put these feelings to one side of how I feel spiritually and what is happening spiritually. So it was very, very difficult for me.
To separate the two things, I can understand. Let's get into some of... Before I get into the stories in the book, I've got a couple of them here that your publisher sent kindly. Why did you want to write a book of these experiences? What was it that made you do it?
I have a kidney and liver failure. And I'd been to the doctors and it wasn't good news. And as I walked past the charity shop at the bottom, there were two books in the window. And I'd been thinking about it because I'd read Adam Kay's This Is Going to Hurt. And I thought, I have got so much to tell, you know, spiritually, you know, bring comfort to people. And so I walked past the charity shop, there were two books in the window, and they were both wrote by mediums, Pam Britton and Alison Ryder. Mm-hmm. And so I went in and I thought, I can do this and I'm going to do it. And when I looked on the back of the books, the publisher, it was Local Legend. So in my heart of hearts, I felt, this is the publisher for me. So 2 days later, after I got over the shock of the news from doctor, I started to write. And I wrote about, five or six stories, something like that. And I sent it to Nigel. Never in 100 years did I think that he would accept it. So he did, and he guided me all the way through. And then subsequently, I wrote two more books after that. So I just wanted to write the book to give people comfort and some peace to know that when mum, dad, child, animal even, passes over, there's always somebody there to accept them, to look after them. And yeah, they do come back in spirit.
Glynis Amy Allen, more from her in a moment. I could listen to her all day and all night because you can tell that she worked in that sector, and whether you believe that such things happen or not, it's quite compelling to listen to, don't you think? We recorded that conversation a couple of days ago, and of course, for regulatory broadcast reasons and common sense too, we tell you that this conversation is offered to you for entertainment purposes, and you must make of it whatever you will. More from Glynis Allen coming next here on The Unexplained.
Smart speaker, smart TV.
Talk first, talk fast.
Talk radio.
The Unexplained with Howard Hughes.
Listen on your smart speaker.
Watch it live on your smart TV.
The Unexplained with Howard Hughes on Talk Radio.
Our gift to the world, live from London every Sunday night. Now we return to Glynis Allen and ghosts of the NHS. Let's get into a couple of the stories then. There was one that struck me about some teenagers. They'd taken drugs at a party. One of them had become very, very severely ill, critical in fact. And there was a young girl, it was, And I'll quote from the book. The paramedic was still doing CPR on her, but I saw that that silver cord you talked about had broken. You see, we took her to a sterile room where a doctor came to certify her death and check for a donor card. When he'd gone, I bent over her. I heard low whisperings in the room. It became very cold. Yeah. Somebody touched my shoulder, but nobody else could have come in, so I thought I would just stand back, watch and listen. I was rewarded by the appearance of a young girl and an older woman moving around. The girl looked like the one who died. The older woman was making a sweeping movement over the body, exactly like a spiritual healer would. I don't know what to make of that. What do you think?
Well, that was a grandmother that had come, and because the girl, it was the first time she'd taken drugs, by the way, and in grandma's eyes, that's wrong. It was wrong in what she did. She'd lost her life. She took these drugs. She'd lost her life. And it's only grandma trying to heal her, basically. Heal her. You know, the grandma stood and the girl at the side of her. And grandma kept putting her hands over her, like doing a spiritual healing. You know, like, you know, if you can imagine a spiritual healer, how they use the hands. And that's how the grandma was going, you know, putting it over the girl, though, to say, I'm healing you, even before, you know, you've got up there, now I'm healing you. So grandma must have been some kind of a healer of some kind. But, you know, it's, as with everything, you can't stay in a room for that long, you know, because obviously you've got to go out and do other things.
Everything
yeah,
moves on.
Very, very upsetting. Yeah. Very.
No, and everything moves on. You have to, you know, more people are coming in, I understand. One of the stories was an elderly lady admitted with lung cancer. And she was getting what they call palliative care, which is basically making you comfortable, isn't it, towards the end. You say that we fussed over her because she had no relatives and never had a visitor. You know, a lot of us wonder what that will be like. One afternoon we were serving tea and I tried to enter the cubicle where she was in. I was blocked by, quotes, invisible cobwebs. Yeah. And then you saw, I think somebody else was with you as well, somebody sitting with her.
Yes.
What happened there?
We were doing a drug round, my colleague and I, and my colleague didn't really believe in all this. It was on, I worked on a chest unit where the grey lady was. And we're doing the drug round, and I opened the cubicle door to go in to see this lady, and I couldn't go through. If you imagine a net curtain that is stuck round a door, and I pushed against the cobwebs and I couldn't get in. And I said to my colleague, Anne, I said, I can't get in. I said, there's like spirits blocking me. And Anne said, there's somebody sat with her and looked, and it was a grey lady. Mm-hmm. I'm absolutely certain it was either the grey lady or some relative that we didn't know, but it was a spirit. It was a spirit that was
so what,
a ghost.
The grey lady was somebody who was seen in the hospital. You think a ghost or a spirit?
Yes, the grey lady. I saw her so many times, and so many times when people were ready to pass over. Mm-hmm. And getting back to this lady with the cobwebs, I said to Anne, I said, you try. She said, oh, my God. She says, I can't get through either. I said, well, you know, we're going to have to leave this a little bit, 5 minutes, because this lady's obviously going to be passing over. She was moribund, you know, that's nearly dead. Mm-hmm. And so I gave it a couple of minutes, and then I went back in. I could get in, and then I just sat with her as she passed over. And then the grey lady had just disappeared.
Now, one of the other stories, we'll tell one more because we've got time to do this. I've often talked about my granddad. I'm from Liverpool, and my dear granddad was a real bootle Liverpool grandfather. You know, he was a very wiry, thin man, but he got stomach cancer, was very, very ill. And I think I was only 11 years of age. And in those days, they used to bring the bed downstairs and the person wouldn't be in hospital, they'd die at home, which is what happened with him. And everybody was going to visit him. Everybody knew what the outcome of this was going to be. And it was terribly, terribly sad. But he, at some point, and I have told this story before, and I swear it's absolutely true, and my father, who's left us now, but he was very moved by this, as you would be. My grandfather talked, there was a, in those days, living rooms had like shelves, but they put a curtain over the shelves. I don't know if you've seen that, but that was something they used to do. It was almost like a store cupboard, but it wasn't. It was just some shelves with a curtain over it. And my grandfather was seeing somebody. He talked about relatives who passed over, and there was even one child who died very young that my father didn't even know about. He talked to her. So, you know, I think from that experience, I would say, these things happen. Now, I know people would disagree with that, and that's absolutely fine. It's just a matter of opinion. But I saw this, and I heard him talk about that, and I know that that seemed to give him some relief at the very end stage. Now, some people may say that's a result of the drugs they were giving him, because they were clearly pumping him full of morphine and stuff. Your story is a woman called Elaine. Terribly sad story. 30, a teacher, coughing up blood, and... She saw what she believed and you believed was an angel.
Yeah, it was Archangel Raphael who was in the room with her. Her name wasn't Elaine, but I'm not going to tell you what her name were. She was a school teacher, not very old. And we all felt so sorry for her, because she weren't, you know, she was so, so lovely. Anyway, this particular night, I think what you've just missed out is that, there was an angel there. It was Archangel Raphael. But also, we heard singing, and we heard children singing. And this is just not me. It is two more colleagues. And we walked down to the cubicle, and in the cubicle, there were Victorian children. There was about three or four, and they were singing. They were singing to this school teacher, All Things Bright and Beautiful. Yeah, and when I think about it now, I'm getting a bit upset, because she was so lovely.
And so young.
And then Archangel Raphael was sort of stood over us, so we knew that, you know, she was going to pass over in the next few hours.
Well, you know, there are quite some stories, Glynis. Sadly, we haven't got any more time, but I do know from talking to people who work in the health service that they see life and death on a daily basis. And, you know, they experience, from what I say, what I hear, rather, I hear that not all of them, they're busy people. Maybe they don't notice. Maybe these things don't happen to them. But they see strange things. Very regularly. They don't talk about them, but that's the case, and it certainly seems that's been very much a part of your life.
Definitely, yeah, and still part of my life, even though at the moment I'm not doing any psychic readings, but every day I connect with spirit, and every day I pray to the angels, but at the moment, because I have a lot on at the moment, health-wise, I'm not doing any readings. You know, so I have other things to do.
I know.
I
wish you, I wish you all the best with everything and all the support that you need and deserve in your own situations. We don't have to wait here on the
road. I'll be fine. Yep.
I think
you
will be.
Thank you so much.
The book is, what is it, Ghosts of the NHS?
Yes, The Ghosts of the NHS and Other Spirits I Have Known.
And it's published, who's the publisher again?
Local Legend.
Local Legend. It's Glynis Amy Allen, the book Ghosts of the NHS. Thank you very much. Please take care.
Yeah, and thank you for listening.
I've got to say, a lot of us are going to end our time in hospital. My lovely parents both did. Can only hope that we have somebody like Glynis Allen looking after us at that crucial time. At the end of our lives, don't you think? The book, as she said, is called Ghosts of the NHS, and you please make of that whatever you want to. Coming next, Dr. David Hall, we're going to talk about UFOs.
Breakfast Talk.
News Talk.
Business Talk.
Talk Radio.
Have breakfast with Julia Hartley Brewer.
On the station that isn't afraid of free speech.
Tomorrow morning from 6:30 on Talk Radio.